Welcome, quiz enthusiasts, once again to the world's toughest podcast quiz. That is the 20 Questions Quiz Podcast, the 10th episode of 2024. And as we mark this special milestone, prepare for a riveting quiz experience that spans across various domains, testing your knowledge on subjects ranging from science to pop culture to history and beyond. Before we dive into the questions, let's revisit the rules if you're here for the first time or you're a seasoned campaigner. The 20 questions works like this. Each question will build upon the last, getting harder and harder as the quiz goes on. Your goal is to conquer each one. One wrong, it's game over and I take the victory. I will read the question twice to give you a fair essence of the subject before the timer starts ticking. 10 seconds to give me the answer. Get it right, you stay in. Get it wrong, you're out. You can connect with us by reaching out at 20 Questions Quiz on X and share your triumphs or tribulations also at 20questionsquiz@gmail.com. So, will you emerge victorious in this 10th episode of 2024 and claim the title of the Ultimate Quiz Champion? Let's find out, shall we? Here we go again. Let's see if you can conquer 20 questions. Plenty of different subjects to come in this edition of 20 questions. But as always, we start incredibly easy and we get harder as the quiz goes on. So settle back, settle in, and let me begin with question number one. Which is this? Which part of the human body can be fastened into a bun? Which part of the human body can be fastened into a bun?
Five, four, three, two, one.
The hair on the human head is typically the part that can be fastened into a bun. I should know, I had that hairstyle for a number of years. Hair buns are a popular hairstyle where the hair is twisted or pulled back and secured in a rounded shape, often at the back of the head. Question number two. How many rings are there on the Olympic flag? How many rings are there on the Olympic flag?
Five, four, three, two, one.
The Olympic flag has five rings. These rings, known as the Olympic rings, are interlocked and coloured blue, yellow, black, green and red on a white background. The symbol was designed by Pierre de Coubertin, the founder of the modern Olympic Games, and it represents the five continents of the world coming together in the spirit of friendly competition and sportsmanship. Question three. Complete the title of this Shakespeare play. Much Ado About. Complete the title of this Shakespeare play. Much Ado About.
Five, four, three, two, one.
Much Ado About Nothing is the title of the Shakespeare play. To question four, and in electronics, what does DC stand for? In electronics, what does DC stand for?
Five, four, three, two, one.
In electronics, DC stands for direct current. It refers to the continuous flow of electric charge in a single constant direction. This is in contrast to alternating current, AC, where the electric charge periodically reverses direction. Devices such as batteries typically provide direct current. We move on now to question number five. Which parts of a car have discs and pads? Which parts of a car have discs and pads?
Five, four, three, 3, 2, 1.
Yes, I put this question in because I had this problem on my car recently and it cost me an arm and a leg to get them replaced. Discs and pads are components of a car's braking system. They are commonly found in the disc brake system, which is a type of braking mechanism used in modern vehicles. Question number 6. On which river does Paris lie? On which river does Paris lie?
Five, four, three, two, one.
Paris, the capital of France, lies on the River Seine. The Seine River runs through the heart of Paris, dividing the city into the left bank and the right bank. The Seine is a significant and iconic feature of the city, and many famous landmarks, including the Eiffel Tower and Notre Dame Cathedral, are situated along its banks. And it will be centre stage at the Olympics this year because the opening ceremony will be taking place on the Seine. Question 7. What nationality was artist Henri Matisse? What nationality was artist Henri Matisse?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Now we've gone from Paris, France. Surely I wouldn't have done two French in a row, but I have. Henri Matisse, the renowned artist, was French, born on December the 31st in 1869, and became one of the leading figures of modern art in the early 20th century. Matisse was associated with the Fauvist movement and is known for his use of bold colours and innovative techniques in painting and sculpture. Question number 8. I've chucked a curveball in quite early here to try and get rid of a few of you, and this one might work. Can you tell me, please, what kind of plant is a Jerusalem artichoke? What kind of plant is a Jerusalem artichoke?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Have I got rid of a few of you here? Potentially. We shall see. A Jerusalem artichoke, also known as a sunchoke, is not actually an artichoke, nor is it from Jerusalem. It is a type of sunflower and belongs to the sunflower family. The edible part of a Jerusalem artichoke is the tuber, which is an underground storage root. These tubers have a sweet, nutty flavour and are often used in cooking, similar to potatoes. Despite the name, Jerusalem artichokes have no relation to Jerusalem and are believed to have originated in North America. Sunflower is the right answer. Question number 9. Going back here many, many a year, to the 1960s children's television. But maybe one or two of you in the modern era will know this one as well, because there was a film about this a couple of years back. Number 9 is this. What is the name of the arch villain in the TV series Thunderbirds? What was the name of the arch villain in the TV series Thunderbirds?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The arch villain in the TV series Thunderbirds was the Hood. The Hood was the primary antagonist who frequently tries to sabotage International Rescue's missions and steal their advanced technology. Thunderbirds, a British science fiction TV series created by Jerry and Sylvia Anderson, featuring marionette puppetry and focusing on the high-tech International Rescue Organization and its missions to save people in peril. The Hood is one of the recurring characters throughout the series. Question 10. Mount Elbert is the highest peak in which mountain range? Mount Elbert is the highest peak in which mountain range?
Five, four, three, two, one.
Mount Elbert is the highest peak in the Rocky Mountains. The Rocky Mountains, often referred to as the Rockies, stretch more than 3,000 miles from the northernmost part of British Columbia in Canada to New Mexico in the southwest US. Mount Elbert is located in the US state of Colorado, and it stands as the highest point in the entire Rocky Mountain range, with an elevation of 14,440 feet above sea level. Halfway through this edition of 20 questions. Questions to come on the animal kingdom, China, pop music, history, religion, and we will end with the Nobel Prize. But first, James Bond. What did James Bond use as stepping stones to escape from an island in the 1973 film Live and Let Die? What did James Bond use as stepping stones to escape from an island in the 1973 film Live and Let Die?
Five, four, three, two, one.
Now this is a fascinating story if you want to look this up online. I think it did the rounds on social media maybe a few months ago. In the 1973 film Live and Let Die, the character James Bond, played by Roger Moore, uses crocodiles as stepping stones to escape from an island. In a memorable scene, Bond is trapped on an island surrounded by dangerous wildlife, including crocodiles. To evade his pursuers, Bond walks across the backs of crocodiles to reach safety. It is one of the most iconic and daring moments, not just in the Bond series, but in any film. Now, the stuntman who used that, he owned the crocodile farm in which the stunt was used. It took him four takes, and included on one of the takes, one of the crocodiles actually bites his foot. His father, who owned the crocodile farm before him, lost his life after being eaten by a crocodile as well. But such was the dangerous stunt that they used it on the fourth or fifth take. It's amazing if you can find it on social media. I will try and put it up on our account on X if I can find it. Trust me, it is worth seeing. Question 12. Speaking of X on our account at 20 Questions Quiz, you're going to see a picture of question 12 that might help you here, in fact. It will be a picture of the largest rodent in the world. What is it called? Question again, if you have not on X, but it's still the same question. What is the name of the largest rodent in the world?
Five, four, three, two, one.
Now, if I didn't want to own a dog, this is something I would love to own. These look like a barrel of fun. They're called the capybara, and they hold the title for the largest rodent in the world. Now, capybaras are native to South America, and they're known for their semi-aquatic lifestyle. They have a robust, barrel-shaped body, webbed feet, and a dense, coarse fur. Now, capybaras are very social animals and are often found near bodies of water, and they're also very calm, they're very cute as well. They are herbivores, feeding on grasses and aquatic plants. Now, adult capybaras can weigh between 77 and 146 pounds. That's between 35 and 66 kilos or even more. And they play a significant role in the ecosystems they inhabit. If you're not on X, check them out. The capybara, it is on our Twitter feed. Question 13. What was the profession of his mother in the song The House of the Rising Sun? What was the profession of his mother in the song The House of the Rising Sun?
Five, four, three, two, one.
one of the most iconic songs, I think, in the history of pop music, The House of the Rising Sun by The Animals. The lyrics of The House of the Rising Sun mention that the singer's mother was a tailor. The reference to the mother being a tailor is part of the narrative in the song, which tells the tale of regret and consequences of the life spent in the House of the Rising Sun. The lyrics go, "My mother was a tailor, she sewed my new blue jeans. My father was a gambling man down in New Orleans." Question 14. What is the literal meaning of the Chinese term feng shui? What is the literal meaning of the Chinese term feng shui?
Five, four, three, two, one.
The term feng shui literally translates into wind water in English. It is a Chinese philosophical and metaphysical system that originated over 3,000 years ago. Feng shui is concerned with the arrangement and orientation of objects and spaces in relation to the flow of energy known as qi or qi, with a goal of harmonizing individuals with their environment. The concept is deeply rooted in Chinese culture and has applications in various aspects of life, including architecture, interior design, and urban planning. Question 15. Which organization was formed as part of the Bretton Woods Conference in 1944? Which organization was formed as part of the Bretton Woods Conference in 1944?
Five, four, three, two, one.
The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, was one of the organizations formed as part of the Bretton Woods Conference in 1944. The Bretton Woods Conference, held in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, USA, established a framework for the post-World War II international monetary system. The IMF, along with the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, the IBRD, which is now part of the World Bank, were created to promote international economic cooperation and stability. The IMF's primary purpose is to ensure the stability of the international monetary system, the system of exchange rates and international payments that enables countries to transact with each other. The IMF, or I will accept the World Bank, is the right answer. So we've reached the final five. Questions to come on New York, the Catholic Church, the Bible, revolutionaries, and the Nobel Prize stands between you and potentially defeating 20 questions this week. Five to go. Question 16 is this. In total, how many spikes are there on the crown of the Statue of Liberty in New York? In total, how many spikes are there on the crown of the Statue of Liberty in New York?
Five, four, three, two, one.
The crown on the Statue of Liberty in New York has seven spikes or rays. These spikes represent the seven continents and seven seas, symbolizing the universality of liberty and freedom. The Statue of Liberty, a gift from France to the US, is a symbol of freedom and democracy and is located on Liberty Island in New York Harbor. Four to go. Question 17. What Pope had a 33-day reign in 1978? What Pope had a 33-day reign in 1978?
Five, four, three, two, one.
Pope John Paul I had a brief papal reign of only 33 days in 1978. He was born Albino Luciani and became the 264th Pope of the Roman Catholic Church. Pope John Paul I's pontificate began on August 26, 1978 and sadly ended with his death on September 28, 1978. Despite the brevity of his papacy, he is remembered for his warm and personable demeanor. Question 18 is on the Bible. In John's Gospel of the New Testament, which of the 12 apostles is also called Didymus? In John's Gospel of the New Testament, which of the 12 apostles is also called Didymus?
Five, four, three, two, one.
The Gospel of John, as part of the New Testament. In the Gospel of John, one of the 12 apostles is referred to as Didymus. Didymus is a Greek word for twin. The apostle, commonly known as Didymus, is Thomas. Therefore, it is Thomas that is also referred to as Didymus. Two to go. Two questions remain on this edition of 20 questions. Revolutionaries is question 19. The penultimate question is this. What was Che Guevara's qualified profession? What was Che Guevara's qualified profession?
Five, four, three, two, one.
One of the most iconic faces of the 20th century, that is for sure. Even I had a t-shirt with Che Guevara's face when I was at university many, many years ago. Ernesto Che Guevara began his professional journey as a doctor, obtaining his degree in 1953 from the University of Buenos Aires. However, his life took a dramatic turn when he became inspired by revolutionary ideals and joined Fidel Castro in the Cuban Revolution. During the revolution, Che served as a key military strategist and commander, contributing significantly to the success of the revolutionary forces against the Batista regime. After the revolution's triumph in 1959, Guevara held various positions in the Cuban government, including Minister for Industry. Despite his medical background, he became deeply involved in revolutionary politics, advocating for socialist and Marxist-Leninist ideologies. Che Guevara's commitment to revolutionary movements extended beyond Cuba, and he played a role in attempts to spread revolutionary ideals in other parts of Latin America and Africa. His experiences and observations during these endeavors were chronicled in his writings, including The Motorcycle Diaries and Guerrilla Warfare. Che Guevara's iconic image, often symbolizing resistance and rebellion, has made him a global, cultural, and political figure. While he started as a qualified medical professional, his legacy is largely defined by his revolutionary activities and his commitment to the pursuit of social justice. So we've made it. The final question on this edition of 20 questions. If you got the previous 19 right and you are still standing, all credit to you. To defeat 20 questions and to say you have that mantle of defeating perhaps the podcast world's toughest quiz, this is the question you need to get right, and it's on the Nobel Prize. The final question, question 20 of 20, is this. Who was the first person to win two unshared Nobel Prizes in two different fields? Who was the first person to win two unshared Nobel Prizes in two different fields?
Five, four, three, two, one.
first person to win two Nobel Prizes in two different fields was Marie Curie. She was awarded the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1903, but she shared with her husband Pierre Curie and Henri Becquerel for their work on radioactivity. In 1911, Marie Curie received the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for her discovery of the elements radium and polonium, making her the first and only individual to win Nobel Prizes in two different scientific fields. But, as I said, one was shared. So, who is the first person to win two unshared Nobel Prizes in two different fields? That's the question. The answer, Linus Pauling. Born in 1901, was a highly accomplished American chemist, biochemist, and peace activist. His scientific contributions and tireless advocacy for peace played significant roles in his dual Nobel Prize recognition. He won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry in 1954. Pauling's early work focused on the nature of the chemical bond, and he made groundbreaking contributions to the understanding of the nature of chemical bonds and the structure of molecules. His book, The Nature of the Chemical Bond, published in 1939, is considered a classic in the field of chemistry. Pauling's insights into the structure of complex substances, including proteins, laid the groundwork for advancements in biochemistry. He won one for chemistry, the other was for peace. As an advocate for peace, he won the Nobel Prize in 1962 for peace. Pauling was deeply concerned about the dangers of nuclear weapons testing and proliferation. He became actively involved in the movement against nuclear weapons in 1957. In 1957, he presented a petition known as the Russell-Einstein Manifesto, calling for an end to nuclear weapons testing. This initiative laid the groundwork for the Pugwash Conferences on Science and World Affairs, an organization advocating for peace that won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1995. Despite facing criticism and political backlash in the US for his activism, Pauling remained committed to promoting global disarmament. Linus Pauling's achievements in both chemistry and peace exemplify the breadth of his intellectual pursuits and his dedication to using science for the betterment of humanity. He remains a unique figure in Nobel Prize history for his individual recognition in two distinct fields. And there you have it. That concludes the 10th edition of 20 Questions here in 2024. Can you believe it? We've reached March already? Wow. The year is absolutely flying. And were you flying on today's edition of 20 Questions? Let me know on X at 20 Questions Quiz. Just to remind you, if you go on there as well, you'll see what a capybara looks like. And I will also try and find as well the video of the stuntman going over the crocodiles in Live and Let Die. Trust me, it is worth seeing. Thank you so much for your company, wherever you may be in the world right now. Just to remind you, if you want to get in touch with me, send me a message on X at 20 Questions Quiz or drop me a email. 20 Questions Quiz, that is the word 20, questionsquiz@gmail.com. It is in the description for this episode somewhere. We are back on Thursdays, and every Thursdays, new episodes drop at 6 a.m. Do not forget to subscribe wherever you may be in the world. And don't forget to tell your friends to see if they can surpass you on 20 Questions. From me, Johnny Bryan, thank you so much for your company once again. Till next time, see you soon. Bye for now.